Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Higher Dimension, BBS Radio, coming to you live. And we have today a wonderful guest. I am Phyllis Pricer, of course, your hostess, and our wonderful guest today is Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr., and he is speaking for himself and his wife about the Roswell legacy. It is the untold story of the first military officer at the 1947 crash site of Roswell, New Mexico. And I want to welcome Dr. Marcel to the show. And we're so glad that you could be with us, Dr. Marcel.
Well, it's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Oh, yes. And we've had Dr. Stanton Freeman on, and we've also had Barney and Betty Hicks. I'm forgotten their last name.
Hill.
Yeah. A real hard name to remember, right? We've had their niece on. So we've had a few people on that are wonderful. And, of course, your story is really, it's almost a first-person story in the sense that your dad, as I understand it, was closely involved in the first few days and weeks of this issue. And I'm going to let you tell the story in your words of what it was all about, because I think it's so important to know that there is someone who's still living who is a witness to this. So please, give us your story, sir.
Well, you know, to begin with, my dad was the intelligence officer for the 509th Bomb Group, which is the bomb group that dropped the nuclear bombs on Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So these were all hand-picked people, well-trained in their profession, and very professional. But my dad's job at the, and we were stationed at the Army Airfield at Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. And since he was the intelligence officer, my dad was actually supposed to investigate unusual events, you know, aircraft accidents and things of that nature, anything to do with aircraft, actually. And apparently something crashed on a ranch outside of Roswell in July of 1947, June or July 1947. The rancher, Mac Brazel, was the one who found this, and when he looked at this, he found a large field of just nondescript metallic debris scattered over a large area. Not knowing what it was, he picked up representative parts of it and brought it to the local sheriff of Chavez County. The sheriff then decided he better alert the air base in Roswell that something crashed on this rancher's land. So Colonel Blanchard, who was the base commander at the Roswell Army Airfield, sent my dad and CIC agent of Sheridan Cabot out to investigate this. And when my dad got out there, he found this, you know, as described, a large area where there's metallic debris of all kinds of description. And not knowing what it was, he picked up parts of it, too, and brought it into the base at Roswell. However, on his way to the air base, even though it was late at night, he thought he better show myself and my mother something that was very unusual, very unique, as a matter of fact. So when he came into town, he drove by our house and pre-positioned some of this debris out on our kitchen floor and got myself and my mother up to look at this. And I caught, you know, he was very excited. He thought this something unique, something that we'll never see again. And I think he used words of flying to saucer to describe this.
Uh-huh.
So that piqued my interest. And so we started examining this metallic debris, and that's where I came into this thing.
Okay. And how old were you at the time?
I was 11 years old at that time.
Wow. I'll bet you were just at the right age.
Yeah, very curious. Very curious and interested.
Yes, and yes, and how exciting. So tell us how it developed from then on in, because many people have gone on to scoff that it was a joke, or it was a lie, or it was made up, or it was pranksters. Balloon is the other thing that comes to mind, that, you know, anything but what it really, really appears to have been.
That's right. Well, you know, Colonel Blanchard saw this, and he immediately recognized this as something very out of the ordinary. And since there was unknown objects flying through the skies of the United States at that time, you know, mm-hmm. I guess Kenneth Arnold had termed these flying saucers because he had first reported these over Mount Rainier in Washington State.
Uh-huh.
So what Colonel Blanchard did was to assign the public information officer, Walter Haupt, a task of releasing this to the press. That's what Walter did. He released it to the press as Army Air Force captures flying disc or something to that effect.
Captures it, huh?
That's where it started.
Okay. Go ahead.
So then, you know, what he did, he wanted General Ramey, who was the 8th Air Force commander at Fort Worth Army Airfield in Fort Worth, to look at this, too, since this is over his pay grade, so to speak, to determine what to do with it. So my dad flew a portion of this debris in a B-29 under armed guard to the air base in at Fort Worth so that General Ramey could look at this. And there are some famous pictures of my dad holding parts of what was a radar target in General Ramey's office. And, of course, that wasn't what he brought in. But General Ramey determined that this is something that should not be released publicly at this time. And he ordered my dad to be quiet about this and, you know, never say anything about this again. This is top secret material here.
Uh-huh.
So, but if you look at those photographs of my dad holding this radar target, you know, look on his face, you know, like, you got to be kidding me. This is not what I brought here. But but that's where the cover story started. It was obviously a mistaken identification of a radar target that that they had made. And, of course, that's malarkey. So,
okay.
And I guess, you know, from what I understand, parts of it was then flown to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. But maybe that's where it still is. Who knows?
Uh-huh. Well, what decided you after all this time? I mean, you're now retired. You became a military officer, right?
Right.
And you became a physician as well.
I did, yes.
Okay. And you were affiliated with the military all these years. I think that's absolutely fascinating. And, you know, tell us what was life like and how were things handled after that? I mean, this was pretty profound, and all of a sudden you weren't supposed to talk about it, pretend it didn't exist, all of this.
Well,
how was it for your dad for the rest of his life on this one?
Well, yeah, what happened is that when my dad came back from Fort Worth, he sat my mother and myself down and just told her under no circumstances were we to ever discuss these findings again. And that's where it stayed for many, many years, and actually until 1978 when I guess Stan Freeman heard that my dad had an unusual story to tell about a crashed saucer device in New Mexico. So Stanton interviewed my dad in 1978, and that's where the story finally broke.
Okay, so your dad felt that in 1978 he could finally open up and talk about this.
Yes, yeah, 30 years later, so he thought...
Amazing, amazing. And you had to keep this hidden all these years.
I knew it was always in the back of my mind that that we had seen remnants of probably an extraterrestrial craft, a UFO or whatever they call them, and now a flying saucer. And it did indicate to me that obviously we're not alone, that there's more advanced civilizations out there, and
mm-hmm.
some of those are actually exploring our skies, you know, kind of looking over this primitive civilization on planet Earth.
Okay. I wanted to know, how did this impact your life, if at all? Now, having this your own personal knowledge and having to sit on it all those years and just sort of wait it out. And how did you feel when you heard all these stories and everything else going around and you weren't allowed to correct the errors or the misinformation?
Well, first of all, it did make me interested in astronomy and cosmology because I realized, you know, from an early age that there's other planetary systems out there. As a
mm-hmm.
matter of fact, only recently have we actually determined that there's other planetary systems out there
mm-hmm.
with NASA's Hubble telescope and other telescopes. So
mm-hmm.
far, we've not found any Earth-like planets yet, but our technology is not advanced enough to be able to do that. But that's just around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
But it did make me interested in astronomy and cosmology. And it was in the back of my mind. I'd hear people talk about it, but it didn't bother me because I knew what the secret was. I knew what it was, and it didn't. I don't care what people talk about or what they say or what they feel because I know the truth.
Okay, you knew the truth, and somehow that was a comforting feeling all those years, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was there any talk at the time about there being bodies with that, or was that a different incident?
Well, you know, there was actually two areas where debris was found. there was a debris field that my dad was associated with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happened was that the larger part of the craft came to Earth some distance away, and my dad was not associated with that, but that was another separate recovery system. And apparently that's where the bodies were located. Now, my dad never saw that. You know, he didn't. If he did see bodies, he never told me about that.
Okay.
But at any rate, that was another recovery group that went out there to collect that debris. So we were associated primarily with the first debris field.
Okay. The one that they later tried to pass off, and then they're trying to say that there wasn't any further debris.
Yeah.
But apparently this was associated with, it was one plane or one craft that was broken up into a parts over a larger period of ground, a piece of ground.
Well, you know, my impression was that the debris that we had seen came from the interior.
Okay.
And that, like, there was an in-flight explosion, blew a bunch of stuff out, crippled this craft enough to where it came really distance away. At least that's, in my mind, that's what happened.
Okay. And I'm assuming that there were things that, as an adult, you learned to associate with what you would think would be what may be on the interior of a plane.
Right, yes.
From your knowledge.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. And you've been interested in cosmology. How have you followed that up in your life?
Well, I'm an amateur astronomer. I have a telescope in my backyard, and I do a lot of reading about astronomy and keep up with the findings of the Hubble telescope, the wonders of the universe.
That's marvelous, isn't it?
Yeah, beautiful it is, and this is where we live.
Isn't it fabulous? It's just great. So in coming out, what were you hoping to do? Just set the record straight, or what is your desire?
Okay, you know, my dad died in 1986, so after he died, then everybody started coming to me for information. And there's a lot of misinformation about my dad, too, being put out.
Uh-huh.
So what I did, I wrote a book, The Roswell Legacy, just to kind of establish the fact that my dad was a credible person. You know, he knew what he was talking about. He's a World War II hero. He's decorated many times. And he had enough training to know what a radar turret looked like as opposed to a flying saucer.
Right.
Matter of fact, Hap Arnold, who he was working with at the beginning of the war, sent him to intelligence school, and he actually did well enough there that he was put on the faculty of the intelligence school.
Wow.
And then after the war was over, he went to radar school, so he was well acquainted with radar targets and
mm-hmm.
and everything that was airborne, you know, from aircraft to radar targets. So
mm-hmm.
he knew what he was looking at. And I will say that the 509th group, they were handpicked people, handpicked for their integrity and honesty.
Okay. Well, that sounds very, 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 very convincing. So what are some of the things that were put out by your dad that you had hoped to correct? You know, we're debunking. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, feel free to call in to BBS Radio to ask questions about this subject, because here you have somebody who will not always be alive, not that we're hoping for your early demise, sir, but who at this point in time is alive and well and kicking, and actually saw this and could put his hands on it, or did put his hands on it, and who you know, you might want to just verify and talk to this, because this is a piece of history that we would really like to keep alive and well, because I think there is, while I don't believe in conspiracies, I do think there are people who try to hide things. In my opinion, it's ignorance to hide things, but, you know, that's just my professional opinion. People, you know, it's much more wise to be open and honest and say there are things out there that we just don't know about and can't deal with. But, you know, I think it's folly to think we're the only species walking around, you know, in the universe. But anyway, I think it's wonderful to be able to speak to somebody personally. So if you have any questions or want to ask, you know, this is the right time to tune in and ask. So go ahead and tell us a little bit more about this in your life. And
whatever, what I had asked you for. Well, you know, people have asked that it make my religious affiliation or feelings different. I said, well, you know, I'm a Roman Catholic, and what it did,
yeah.
it kind of reinforced my belief in a creator, because
he
created not just us, but a lot of other people out there, too, our cousins, so to speak.
Right.
As a matter of fact, the Pope himself has come out basically saying that it's okay to believe in extraterrestrial life and still be in a belief in God, that you're not to hurt that at all, which it didn't.
Well, of course it wouldn't. Go ahead. In my opinion, anyway.
Either there's a lot out there, or if there's not people out there or other civilizations, there's an awful lot of wasted space, somebody once said,
in
the universe. But at any rate, I live my life accordingly, and I always in the back of my mind that we're not alone, and I don't think it would actually cause any widespread panic if this is disclosed to the public. So I don't know why they're holding back on it. This is a worldwide event that's going on. It's not just the United States.
Russia
has this.
Yes.
France, Germany. All the countries of the world have their experience with the UFOs. And maybe they're looking to the United States for leadership on this thing to divulge this amazing secret here.
Well, yeah, I guess I've been aware of some of the shows. Now, remember back in when I was over in Tucson in the 90s, when they had a brilliant show, and they were all asking these ships with lights were coming over the city. I think it was in August of 92, 93, 94, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really write these things down in a diary, but I should. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it looked like UFOs, and these huge things were moving back and forth across the sky, and they were being filmed. Mexico had a lot of sightings that year. And then I guess France also. It seems to go from country to country, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, they're out there, and my feeling is these are probably information gathering probes to kind of see how this primitive civilization is doing and see if we survive our nuclear adolescence here.
Yeah.
But I think that's what that is. It's just they're just scientifically curious about us, just like we would be about them.
Exactly. And people were saying, well, if they were really alive, they'd contact us. And there have been stories about, yes, there have been contacts between those who are from other worlds than ours. But everybody official denies it until it's officially spoken. Nobody wants to admit such a thing could be the case. But I personally would wonder about that if nobody agreed to it. Again, it seems as though they just want to lift up the corner of the rug and brush under the rug that it doesn't exist. And of course, common sense would tell you we're not the only game in the universe, so to speak.
No, we're not. I think NASA conducted a survey some time ago as to what happened, not if, but when the disclosure is made, as to what effect this would have on people. And by and large, most people would accept it matter-of-factly, like, we already know that. It's there. Obviously, they're there. The only people who would be disturbed from their study is that the real fundamental religious people might be a little doubtful to realize that God created not just us, but others, too.
Yeah.
But that's all that would happen. And I don't think there'd be widespread panic like there was in 1938 when Orson Welles broadcast War of the Worlds. And people grabbing their shotguns and burning up their houses and things like that. I don't think that would happen.
Well, I don't either, because I think, frankly, shotguns wouldn't work real well.
I think it'd be a little primitive there, yes.
Yeah, slingshots might work better, you know?
Yeah.
But I would think also that if there were a need for this contact, and it maybe would show that we are growing up a little in this world. If we did have contact, that we were growing up and moving into a more adult relationship with our neighbors, so to speak.
Well, President Reagan gave a very famous address to the United Nations about that. He says, wouldn't that bring us together if we realize that we're not alone, that maybe there's others out there, and he thinks that would bind us together, that human humanity being way it is. We should come together and forget all our wars and warlike tendencies. And he also made a very curious statement. It's like he said something like, "Oh, what if they're already here?" You know. So kind of it was admitting that they're here. We should come together on this thing.
Well, I would think so. I don't know that anybody rushed out, you know, with the open hand of tidings and put out to welcome that.
Yeah.
But I do know, I remember in the 50s when there were UFOs in the late 50s, 56, 57, something like that. I was about 12 years old, and I remember going out and seeing all these lights, and people were shouting and yelling and pointing and, you know, about these lights hovering over D.C., and they were saying, oh, there was no way they could stop this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, you know, what a big deal, you know, if they could arrive at that point, you know, they kind of couldn't come when they want to come and leave when they want to leave. And I don't think that if they wanted to do us harm, my personal opinion is, they would have done something already.
Well, you know, they've been here for thousands of years, you know.
Uh-huh.
You look at the cave art, even, you know, and depicted what would be typical flying saucers in paintings on the walls of caves, and you know, some of the masters painted pictures. There's one particular one I can think about showing Madonna and child
with a UFO
in the background. There's a UFO.
Exactly.
And there's a guy with his dog looking at it. You know, so hey, they're here.
Well, you know what I thought. What I saw yesterday, I was up in Front Royal at this wonderful store I go to, and they have a head from the Shang Dynasty in jade, and I swear to you, it's a UFO, okay? It has it has that look about it. It has those eyes that you associate with them, okay? It done in turquoise, and the Shang Dynasty is like 3,000 to 1,600 BC.
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, they're here. They've been here. We're still here, so we don't have anything that they want. So that's
well,
that's
if they wanted, they could have kind of took it by.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's the bottom line.
Maybe they're here because they want to pick up some cheap real estate.
Yeah. Well. At any rate, you know, I think they're just a curious race. As a matter of fact, I think there's certainly more than one civilization looking at us.
Yes.
Obviously, there are many inhabited planets out there, certainly technologically more advanced than we are.
Well, I would think also that not all people would look like us. You know, we, just like all animals, don't look like each other. You know, there are different species.
Yeah, that's right. So.
And so to think that everybody would have to look like us, I think that we are what, built to adapt to our particular Earth atmosphere?
Yeah.
So if there were different atmospheres in different worlds, which I assume there are, at least that's what's coming back, then people would be made to be able to adapt to that particular atmosphere.
Yeah.
And so they would, by necessity, look different, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they'd look. I think there'd be differences. But I think basically we probably share a lot of anatomic similarities. You know,
really?
A head on the body.
That works.
And limbs, you know, arms and legs and
for
both
locomotion, right?
So I think basically they would not look that amazingly different than
us. Uh-huh.
I think they'd be like intelligent worms or slugs or things like that. Because you know, if so, they couldn't build. Craft.
Yes, they would need arms to build, wouldn't
they
and feet to move.
Anatomic similarity to be able to do this.
Well, you know, there's also some speculation that they also may be more of an energy body rather than a physical.
Well, that's, you know, maybe the truly advanced ones, maybe millions of years ahead of us, have evolved to that. Who knows?
Yeah, but it's fascinating, isn't it, to speculate on such a thing. And it's a lot of fun. I find it fascinating to talk about it. And to be matter of fact, and you're a scientist, and you don't think that this necessarily conflicts with what we've learned and studied here on this Earth and what we are learning as human beings. I think also what makes it better for everyone is if the truth is spoken and not hidden. Because when you start hiding and lying about things, then you bring in a whole lot of doubt about truth, and when somebody wants to speak out, you find people don't believe you. And I think that's also a very important aspect to consider, that we need to know what truth is. You know, and I also feel that paternalistic or what have you isn't appropriate either, because I think human beings now are more intelligent and have better education on the whole than perhaps our earlier forefathers did. And so they are more able to deal with things that would present themselves that are unusual.
Well, you know, I think the space program has probably educated people the fact that, you know, that there's a good possibility that there's other life out there, that that we would not be too shocked if it shows up at our back door, which it is and has been for a long time. So I think, you know, we're sending our own probes now to Mars and other planets in our own solar system. So if we could do that in our early stages, you know,
mm-hmm.
now people who are hundreds or thousands of years ahead of us can certainly bridge the gulf between stars and make extra stellar explorations possible.
What would you think? Have you ever met anybody who claims to have met or conversed with someone from another sphere?
Oh, not really. You know, I've talked to some people who were a little different, you know, about that. But
nice way of putting it.
I'm very skeptical about that. You know, I guess, you know, there are the people who claim to be abducted. I guess it could certainly happen. I know Bud Hopkins, who is a researcher in this, and he's a very matter-of-fact, down-to-earth guy. And,
right.
And if he says it's happening, I have to believe that, hey, maybe it really is happening.
Okay. Well, I think it might have happened to you. Are you familiar with William Stryber?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. What do you think of what he has to write, that he felt he was taken to study and had contact from the time he was little?
Well, you know, I have to acknowledge the possibility of this happening. I know Bill Stryber very well, so... you know, I've read his books, and he wrote the foreword in one of mine. So, yeah, or at least I wrote the foreword in one of his.
Right.
So, yeah, he says it happened, so I acknowledge the fact that, yeah, it certainly could happen.
Yeah, it's true. I think many people, you know, I have had met people, and I suppose you have too in your wanderings during the years, who claim to have met or talked with those who have gone, who've come from other spheres. And I'm a hypnotherapist, and lately I have been having people talk to me about having come from somewhere else or having had these experiences, but they are hidden deep in their psyche. And I don't go exploring for them. You know, it just sort of pops up or crops up.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting because they are so consistent. I know I've read a lot of Dolores Cannon, who is very famous in this arena, and has written some wonderful books on her hypnosis sessions with people who under hypnosis have advanced a lot of really phenomenal information. And from very, very reputable people, and people who don't want to be known, by the way, who are not out for the glory and are not headline seekers, as they say, and are trying to hide by being quiet and disguising who they are, that they've had these contacts because they don't want to be perceived as, fruits and nuts, so to speak. You know, and I find that persuasive in a way, that these are not people who are seeking the limelight and to, you know, do a hoo-ha-ha thing. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, I think, represent the most famous abduction type scenario. You know,
exactly.
Their story is fairly convincing. As a matter of fact, Astronomy Magazine wrote an article about that, the Zeta Reticuli incident, and they mapped out the star system where these beings that captured, abducted Betty and Barney Hill came
mm-hmm.
from, the Zeta Reticuli system. And, you know, Betty, as you know, drew a star map from from memory.
Right.
And the star map was more complete than the ones that were published at that time. Only recently have the stars that she put in her map have been discovered. So
exactly.
It's almost like she was, well, it's like she actually saw it. So
it has. Then we have to have things like that are convincers.
Yeah, that's a kind of a game breaker right there when you see that.
Yes, I have to agree about that. And one wonders, they suffered a great deal after that. I think there's always a lot of suffering when there are people who are pioneers, and I would consider them pioneers
in
the modern sense. And there are others who just don't want to talk about it because they're afraid. There's a lot of fear factor involved even today, and I'm wondering if it's because people have their own basic insecurities and a feeling of helplessness in the face of people, of other beings who might be stronger. But I'm not the kind of get out your gun and blow if you can blow it away first,
Yeah.
But I wonder why people carry this inordinate fear with them with regard to this. I guess if it's going to be, then you sort of just like bite the bullet, accept it, and see what you can do with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I suppose so. I've never really thought about that much. Like I say, I'm not a researcher. I'm just an observer. I just saw this stuff in Roswell, and I don't go out and do UFO stuff too much. I just kind of stay to myself if I can.
I don't do too much either. I mean, I've seen UFOs. I think I mentioned that over D.C.
Mm-hmm.
years ago.
Was it 1952?
Yeah, back then, and also back in the early 90s.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And, and I had a conversation, at least it was a mental conversation, and in that conversation, information was exchanged that nobody knew about except me. And it was really kind of strange because, as I was fond of saying before that, my mother's from Missouri, show me. I didn't believe in UFOs. I just thought it was, I just didn't go in for that science fiction stuff because I figured, geez, we have enough here on Earth.
Yeah.
I don't need to go outside.
Really, exactly.
I don't need to borrow trouble, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
I have enough problems living with who I am on the Earth. I don't need to go around trying to find out if there's someone else I can hobnob with elsewhere. But the thing is, once that happened, it just kind of blew my mind. And but the other thing is, now what do you do with the information? That's the other thing. I sit here and think, well, it's lovely to have this information, but now what do I do with it? What I mean? It's like, I could discover something really wonderful, but if I can't use it and it's not practical, of what use is it to know that it's there? Does that make sense?
Well, I just catalog it and just put it back.
Yeah. Well, I guess I have to because I couldn't even do anything else with it. It's just interesting to note that I was contacted and that it was a sort of confirmatory thing, so I would believe them for whatever reason because I can't. My life is humdrum. It's, it's no big thing. I'm not a scientist. I have no important people in my life, not that I know that I have at all, although all people are important in life's wheel, okay, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's not like I have something to do with the government and have great impact and, what I say can move mountains and shake worlds and so forth, but it was just interesting to know, and I haven't gone to that either. I went to a few MUFON meetings, and I met a few people that, don't need a spaceship to be really out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they're out there all by themselves. They're not wearing a helmet.
Yeah, I've met that type too. So that's, it's okay. That's just live and let live type.
Whatever it is. And there are some people who are very earnest. I mean, some people that I've known for years who admitted to having seen a spacecraft or had an encounter and then just forget it. They set aside and they say, don't you ever tell anybody I said this, I told this, I'll call you a liar, I'll deny it. And I'm thinking, why are they so scared? Why are they so concerned about it? And there's a lot more contact, I think, than people know.
Yeah, and so, I guess it does kind of engender some insecurity in some people, but I guess, that happens.
What about the contact for purposes of experimentation and things like that? Do you think that would be also something that could happen?
Well, I think the door is open for a lot of things. You know, I think they certainly would be curious about our physical being, you know, anatomically and so forth. So I think, you know, they're interested in our science, they're interested in what we're doing, and probably I'm sure they'd be interested in our physical status
being.
Too.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't know. I have a feeling there's a lot of atrocities that I think that are attributed. I'm not so sure I believe in that. I don't know why. It's just that my feeling is that beings that are that much more advanced would be less prone to such, I guess, barbaric behavior.
Yeah, that'd be my feeling too. You know, I guess, you know, they have the these cattle mutilation scenarios, which I don't know what's doing that.
I don't either. Yeah.
But you know, I don't think they basically would mean any harm for us.
Right. Yeah. I just cannot fathom that that would be a way they would do something, because that's really very primitive, and that's much more along the lines of I'm sorry to say human beings than it is beings who are supposedly more powerful, more advanced. Spiritually, also, I'm told that they're more advanced spiritually.
Sure.
And that doesn't go along with spiritual advancement in my book. At least, you know, there's a more respect for life. So with your studies in this and your what is it that you are looking forward to? Just waiting to see what happens and adopt a wait-and-look-see attitude, or?
Well, you know, I just want to get the story out that as I know it. And
okay.
And to establish my dad's credibility, and that's basically the reason I wrote the book.
And it's a wonderful book. I have to let you know. Please give the name of it again, because I do want people to consider going out and buying it. It is well worthwhile. It's readable. It's not all that long. And it has some really interesting backup information. So please give the name and where they can get it and so forth.
Okay. It's called The Roswell Legacy. And it can be found in Barnes & Noble and Amazon bookstores. And if they want an autographed copy, they can contact my website at jessemarcellsenior.com. That's jessemarcellsrsenior.com. And if they want to purchase one through the website, I will autograph it for them.
Oh, how wonderful. That's very nice of you. Thank you. And so what else would you like to discuss about this along the lines of any further impact? Has it made an impact with your children, or did they develop an interest in pursuing the lines of cosmology?
Well, no, not really. They just accepted that something had happened, and initially they might have been a little concerned about the fact that there's others out there that, you know, we really are not in control of our own sky, so to speak. But they've grown to accept it, and just kind of matter of fact about it. Yeah, that's the way it is.
Okay.
You still have to live your life, make your living, and do what you got to do to get along.
Yeah, it doesn't change one's life dramatically. As I said, it was interesting for that information to come to me and to have that sort of conversation that, oh, yes, they exist, and big whoop. But as I said, I certainly found my life has been going on just the same. I still have to put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, you still got to make a living. Yeah,
I still have bills to pay.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't stop me. And it doesn't stop. Just, you know, just broadens your field of view, though. But
yes.
But
you
still got to live this life in this circumstance. You know, you got to make a living. You know, raise kids and so forth. And that's the way it is.
Exactly. And I think, you know, that's probably maybe one of the reasons why things come to us like this, so that we understand, perhaps. And this is just formulating as I'm talking to you. Perhaps these things come to us in order to help us to understand that. Well, it is just a matter-of-fact thing, and we should accept it. It's just one of those things that happens, and it's just like having a sun and a moon and a star, and that we've learned to fly airplanes or drive cars, and it's just something that is natural and accepting, and we don't have to be afraid of it and awed by it or anything else.
Yeah, like I say, they've been here looking at us for thousands of years, and we're still here, you know, and we're living our life, and slowly advancing technologically, and we're survivors, and we're, you know, that's what it is.
It's fascinating. So what do you want to be? Are you going to be, have you ever gone to Roswell after that? Did you ever go to visit the place? I don't know if it's off limits still or not. I have no clue.
You know, I've been to Roswell, you know, in 1997, they had the 50th anniversary. Kids and I went down to that, and it's just a big carnival-type atmosphere now, but it's been good for the Chamber of Commerce.
There's cynicism for you.
But, you know, it kind of detracts from the from the reality of this thing, and so I'm a little disappointed with that, but that's capitalism, that's commerce for you.
Isn't it? You know, what do you think your dad would say if he were alive now to see the openness that has been engendered?
Well, I think he'd be gratified by this and glad to see it, the story finally unfolding. And he, like I, would be waiting for the government to go ahead and disclose the whole thing. You know, Roswell is not the only thing, only crash site. You know, there's one in Aurora, Texas, apparently that happened.
Okay.
And there's others, you know, there's... I guess in the United Kingdom there was at an air base there, there's a Colonel Holt tape recorded messages, at least his descriptions of a valid flying, you know, extraterrestrial craft. He described it very well, and that was not magic.
Really?
Thing. So
I'm not familiar with that.
I'm trying to think the name of the place that's but there was an air base out there. Where a UFO landed, and he described it very much on a recording. You can hear the excitement, the emotion in his voice as he's describing what he's seeing with the people around him.
And when was this?
Oh, that was back some years ago. Again, I'm kind of drawing a blank on it.
Okay.
But there's, you know, Roswell is not the only event where a spaceship has landed or crashed. I mean, there's been others, too. So it's not just here, but it's elsewhere, too.
Wow. It seems as though, you know, with so many, and I think is it seeming to increase, do you think? Or there seems to be, what is it, runs on it? You know, sometimes they seem to be a lot, and then all of a sudden there's nothing for a while.
Well, I think it comes in waves, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Why do you think that would be, do you know?
Well, you know, who knows? Maybe they want to give Spacer visits out just to see what's transpired since the last one, so to speak, make sure we're still here.
Given the way we behave, I can understand
really, their... You know, so I think they're not here. I don't think they're here continually, like some people believe. But I think there's occasional visits, you know, maybe on periodic timescale tables.
Mm-hmm. That sounds interesting and reasonable and feasible, especially if it's associated with what, exploration? Exploration of the Earth plane and this part of the universe?
Yeah.
That would make perfect sense.
Yeah, so, sure.
Oh, yeah. And that's a really neat thing. Do you think the crop circles have any validation along with that, or do you think it's, like some people are saying, just a big hoax?
Well, I don't know if it's a hoax. It's well done. You know, I don't know what their purpose would be in doing that, but I tell you, some of these crop circles, you know, are very complicated. Are complex, and that's something else that's been around for quite a while too. This is not just a recent development either. You know, like I think they had Doug and Dave who said, "Oh, we made all those circles." You know, that's, you know, a couple of guys in England who just smashed the wheat down with a board. You know, I just don't believe them. I think that these crop circles are too complex for people like Doug and Dave, whoever they are, to have made these. So I don't know. It's a very curious phenomenon.
Yes.
And school's still out as far as I'm concerned on those.
Okay. That sounds fascinating. I was wondering about that because some of them, as I said, some you could possibly do with a board, but they were talking about the structure itself having radiation or not being able to be done in a period of time that these guys said they could do it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's a very complicated solution problem there, so I don't know what the answer is.
So I don't either, but some people were saying it was a really important issue to be considered.
Well, who knows? You know what affected it, what it is, who's making them, and if it's extraterrestrials making them, I'd like to know what do they hope to accomplish from this? What are they for?
Yeah, they look like symbols. They remind one of a form of written language, don't they?
Just to impress us, I guess, maybe. Who knows?
Well, okay, yeah. And why more in England? We don't have that much here in the U.S., do we? I'm not familiar with any.
I don't think so. It has happened, but it's not like not in England. England seems to be the hotbed of that.
Okay. But there were, I think, a lot of, weren't there in France, I think, in the 90s? Was it the 80s, late 80s, where there was a lot of UFO activity, and they were taking these videos of for lack of a better word, aircraft UFOs?
Well, yeah, like I say, it's a worldwide thing. It's not just here in the United States, but there's been some amazing photographs taken of things floating around in the skies that are not fake. You know, unfortunately, with computers, you can fake just about anything, but the photographs that were taken of these strange craft before computers, I think, are genuine. They'd be pretty hard to fake.
Okay. Well, that's... do you have any idea why this would be now? I mean, I've asked you this before, but do you think that the reason for this step up in communication may be because they are getting ready to perhaps have a closer dialogue with mankind?
Well, who knows? You know, don't know what their motive is yet. I think one reason they have not made an overt contact is because they probably have more to fear from us than we from them, you know, based on our shoot first, ask questions later tendency. So I think they probably would keep us at arm's length for a while.
Well, they would be wise to, given some of the trigger-happy people I've met in my life.
Really?
So, at any rate, you're going to continue on with this, are you not, in your life and looking into it and accepting?
I'm not a researcher. Again, I'm an observer. I wrote the book, and I think that's kind of the end of the road for me. You know, I think I just wanted to get this out before I still could get it out. And, and I just kind of sit back and watch and wait and see. And if people want to talk to me about that, I'll be glad to do that. You know, I go to occasional conferences. I just got back from Germany a couple of weeks ago, giving a talk to some people out there, which was very interesting.
How did they greet it? And do people in other countries have a more sophisticated view than we do of it?
You know, I think, I found acceptance pretty much everywhere I've been. I've been to France, I've been to Italy, and I've been to, of course, Germany and Japan. And by and large, people are very accepting of this event.
Okay, by and large. So there are no more accepting in Europe than they are here? Or is there more openness or less fear? Is there any difference in how you feel people are accepting the information?
Yeah, I couldn't detect any really big differences, between the Americans and the Europeans and so forth, or the Japanese.
Uh-huh.
I think we're all about the same.
Okay, because in some ways the Europe seems to be a little bit more advanced than we are.
A little more accepting of it, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Perhaps, that could
that's
be.
Not only in that arena, though, by the way. It's also across the board in healthcare. We maybe have a chance to moving into an area.
Yeah.
But in the alternative therapies, Europe seems to be a bit more open and accepting of using things. Like they used hydrotherapy before we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I come to associate the European concept of being more open and willing to accept unusual situations or willing to try new things rather than adhere to the old.
Well, yeah, perhaps so. I have no experience along that line, so I don't
know. Okay. Well, I just wonder, because that was my experience when I was in healthcare and doing staffing, and it was interesting to find that... we lag behind in certain areas as far as the acceptance of alternative therapies.
Perhaps.
But now the United States seems to be much more open to this, and I'm glad on a number of levels. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or contribute while we're still on the air, sir?
Well, I just want people to know that that we're not alone in the universe, that our extraterrestrial cousins are visiting us, and so far they don't seem to be malicious toward us. And I think people should be prepared for the fact that someday, hopefully soon, the governments will come through and announce the fact that they're out there.
And do you think that that'll come any time really soon?
Well, who knows? I don't know what the feeling is in Washington, so to speak, or other governments. Maybe the United Nations will have to be the ones to announce disclosure. But anyway, you know, they're out there, and not only are they out there, they're here too. So that, I want people to understand that. Don't be afraid of it, because when it happens, when the announcement is made, just accept it.
Okay, and what would you recommend for people who do, you know, bump up against, so to speak, a contact? What would you recommend if they have such a thing happen to them?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? Depends on what the contact is.
Yeah, you mean
if somebody says I was contacted, is there a place they can reach to talk about it, or?
Well, I guess they could put their story out on the internet. That seems to be a favorite.
Isn't it now?
Yeah.
Can you imagine them saying, "Sir, Mr. Alien, would you hold still? I want to get you on YouTube."
Yeah, really. Exactly.
I'm sorry.
They need to document it, the time, place, events, and
now you're giving information,
and so forth,
yes.
So they can put that down as a documentation for this thing. And any photographic documentation would be nice, too. Just the common sense things.
Well, I wonder about that, because there are people who have taken photographs and so forth, and then they're accused, or videos, and then they're accused of having doctored them in some way.
Yeah, unfortunately, photoshopping can destroy a lot of credibility.
Uh-huh. But they should still go ahead and do it, even if that's a possibility of being accused of, doing something to the film later on, though I'm sure it can be proven, can it not? They still have ways of saying whether something is been altered or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I think so. That's their personal choice.
Okay. Well, I've always wondered what it would be good for myself, because it seems to me if somebody's going to contact you, there should be a practical reason for it. not just something you can dine out on at the next party, if you get my drift.
That's why me, yes.
The why me syndrome, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know why somebody was mentioning one time, well, it just seems to be Joe Blow and people who are not, why don't they get in contact with really scientific people and really well-known people? And I'm thinking, well, if they had, I'll bet these people wouldn't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm, right.
They'd hide it, they left the corner of the rug up and scuffle it under there, I'm thinking. But it's an interesting thought, and I don't know that people are calling in. Sometimes I get feedback, Dr. Marcel, mm-hmm. that they find the conversation so interesting they don't want to interrupt.
Well, yeah, perhaps so.
Maybe they're just being kind. I don't know. But I really have found this conversation interesting with you, because you provide a really down-to-earth, low-key approach, and one that seems to be just sort of like American, like guy-next-door type of thing. That this is the way it is, and it's no big deal, and nobody has to get all shaken up and upset about it. Just deal with it on a piece by piece basis.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
And that probably is the best way to look at it. A few people that I know feel that they were subjected to were kidnapped and abducted, I should say. And were subjected to some kind of physical examinations and so forth and so on. And, there's not much I can tell them. As a hypnotherapist, I can work with them on the fear and take them through it. And, on the other plane, it just, there's not much that can be done except to, provide what healing can be done in a setting.
I suppose you're right there, sure.
And some people have had some false ideas. Sometimes they find it's been abuse, And so the scenario is to kind of distance oneself from the abuse as a child, which is an interesting concept. But the things that I have found, none of them have been abused under the situation. And none of them have been, other than meeting with people, I have found no instances of invasive procedures done.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Again, that's I don't think it's anything I'd be worried about or whatever, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, some people are more likely to be sensitive than others, which is fascinating. And I'm so glad that you were able to come on again. We just have a few more minutes, and I'm sorry that some of the listeners didn't decide to call in. As I said, maybe they find it so interesting that they just don't want to. They want to get all the information they can. So if there's anything that I have missed that you think would be of import, sir, to share with the listeners at this time, or to add, I would be delighted to have your input.
Well, you know, again, just to reiterate the fact that that they're out there and that we've been visited, and I think that it's a real phenomenon. It's really happening, and that people should not be fearful about this. We have no control over what's happening, but other than that, I think that just accept it matter-of-factly, and when the announcement does come, just accept it and go out and live your lives as before.
Yeah, you'll still have to pay your mortgage and
yeah,
go to work. It doesn't mean you have a holiday, right?
Yeah, like President Reagan said, though, maybe it would bind us together. Maybe, you know,
it would be
bring
nice.
About a more of a peaceful situation for the world here.
Well, I think if we understood that there was a big brother with a bigger gun,
yeah, right.
there might be more pause. And I would like to think that such a contact would indeed bring peace rather than fear, because I think it's important that we all work together for peace, mm-hmm. not only here on this earth, but elsewhere.
Exactly.
And yeah. I think that's how we'll all get to heaven, by the way.
Yeah, I think so. So
by helping each other.
Brother's keeper, so to speak. You bet.
Well, you know, I think that's the truth that would be throughout the universe itself, and not just for earth plane uses. But at any rate, I thank you so very, very much.
You're very welcome, Phyllis. It's been my pleasure.
And again, give your contact information and so forth so that people can reach out and get that book. I do recommend it. I enjoyed it very much.
Okay.
And I'm keeping it in my library.
Okay. Well, they can get an autographed copy through jessemorcellsenior.com. And are that or Barnes & Noble or Amazon, it's available over a lot of different stores there.
Okay, thank you, and thank you again.
Okay, cool.
I thank you so much, and God bless, and Godspeed.
Thank you. That. God bless you, too.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, and I'm Phyllis Pricer of the Higher Dimensions, and I would like you to tune in again next week, because we have another guest, Larry Flaxman, a very interesting gentleman who has a great tale to tell, and I'm so glad to have had this wonderful person on. Mr. Flaxman is the president of the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies Group, and he is very interested about the meaning behind mysterious signs, time phenomenon, synchronization, and so forth and so on. It should be a fascinating subject. It's a different take on this era. And I am so glad to have come to you today through the auspices of BBS Radio. You can reach me at area code 202-387-2080. And you're certainly welcome to call in. And I am also glad to receive any kind of information. If you have someone you think would be a wonderful person to interview, please let me know. Be glad to talk to them and contact them and see what we can do. God bless you. Have a great week and enjoy. Bye-bye.